What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the First Team All Pro Podcast. This is episode 63 with your host, LT Nasty. And we got a lot to talk about in today's episode, specifically the return of baseball. As you all know, spring training is underway for Major League Baseball. Spring training games have been taking place. We're not too far away from opening day. And on top of that, I'll be getting into the divisions. I'll be giving my predictions, my way too early divisional predictions, which I'm sure most of them will not age well, because anyone that's listened to my podcast in the past knows that anytime I've made a prediction, whether it's in Major League Baseball, the NHL, the NBA, the NFL, most of them usually do not go as planned. So, let's see if that'll change this time around. Also, going to be talking about some recent NHL trades in the last week or two. Actually, in the last like few hours as well. So, we'll be talking about some major NHL trades. And to stay on the topic of the NHL for a minute, I'll also be talking about who's a contender and who's a pretender, as we, you know, march our way towards the Stanley Cup playoffs. So let's start with Major League Baseball. Spring training's back. I'm very hyped about it, which means, you know, for me, because I'm a Yankees fan, Yankees baseball's back. I'm hyped. It feels like it's been an eternity since baseball's been played. So I'm really happy that spring training is back. But as many of you are aware, the pitch clock has been added. It's actually taking effect. It's been taking effect basically all of spring training. Like I said, they just implemented it. And here are my thoughts on the pitch clock. And I know everyone's going to say, well, you know, it's great for the game. You know, it's going to speed up the game a little bit. I don't know what to say. Cause like, me personally, I'm not a fan of it. And I know it's a little early. It's only spring training, but, I'm also not a fan of it because of the, violations of the, pitch clock. Just the other day, I'm pretty sure Manny Machado he was one of the first to have an issue with the pitch clock. Let me double check on that. Yeah, Manny Machado, he drew one of the first pitch clock violations, which this is already ridiculous, and we're only like, we're not even that far in the spring training. I'm going to be like I said, it'll probably grow on me as like the season goes on, as like the season progresses. I'm sure I'll get used to it, but right now, not really a fan of it. You're kind of rushing you're rushing not only the pitcher, but also the, hitter, which it's just not good. It's just not good. Let's see. Let me check what the specific violations were. If you're a hitter or a pitcher and you just so happen to violate the rule. Here it is. If a pitcher does not meet the 20-second rule, which is to deliver the ball, then it's deemed a violation and a ball will be awarded to the batter. I didn't mention this, but this was, when this rule was first coming out, I barely paid attention to that specific rule. I didn't really think about it too much, but now that it's in place, I'm already not a fan of it. But, and I believe vice versa, if, you know, the batter takes too long to get into the box, I believe a strike is rewarded. So let's see. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Boom. There we go. Boom. I hit the nail on the head with that one. So basically, if you don't know, the pitcher has to get it out within, get the ball to the catcher within 20 seconds. If he doesn't, the current hitter, whoever's batting at the time, gets a ball. And if the hitter fails to, be in the box with no less than 8 seconds remaining on the pitch clock, it'll be a strike. So I'm going to be honest. Knowing all that, this is just, like I said, I have to really wait to see how this plays out in a regular season. And correct me if I'm wrong, I've been seeing this clip on Twitter where I believe the Red Sox and I think the Braves, their spring training game, it was like tied at like 6-6, I believe. And the game literally ended off a... It ended off a pitch clock violation. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, multiple articles on it, and it ended in a tie, which that cannot happen. That cannot happen. If you end a Major League Baseball game in a tie, that's a terrible look. Like, this cannot be a thing in the regular season. That's just my honest opinion. That's just not a good look for Major League Baseball. Like I said, I'm going to have to really wait to see how this, new rule plays out, as the season goes on, because I mean, right now, not really that big of, like I said, I'm not that big of a fan of it, especially. And after I found out that game ended in a tie, I'm really not a fan of it. But, you know, we'll see what happens moving forward. We'll see what happens in the regular season. Maybe it'll change. Maybe it'll grow on me. But I'm going to be honest, I still don't think I'm going to be a fan of it. Anyway, like I said, spring training underway, the new pitch clock. And I believe they have effective starting the season. I believe they have bigger bases. So the base size, I believe, is going to be a little bit bigger than normal. Let me just check. I need to check that. I probably should have done this before I started recording. Here we go. The bases are now 18 inches. And previously they were 15 inches. Now they're 18 inches square, obviously, because, you know, it's baseball. They've always played with square bases. But this is going to be interesting. Obviously, home plate stays the same. And another thing to note is that this increase in size of the bases also decreases the distance between first, second, and third base by 4.5 inches, which is going to be interesting, because now it feels like people are going to be stealing bases a lot more this season. I feel like that's one thing I feel like is definitely going to happen because previously it was a very, very long distance between, you know, first, second, and third, but that's how it was normally. Like, it was always a relatively long distance between the bases. Like, that was normal. And now I feel like we're going to see an increase in steals, not just from like one particular team, but across the league. So that's going to be interesting to note moving forward. I'm going to be curious. That's one thing I'm going to be really keeping my eye on as the season ends up, you know, starting and of course progressing. But anyway, let's get right into my way too early divisional predictions for baseball. Let's Let's get right to it. I'm not going to predict the certain amount of wins. Like, I'm not one to say, oh, this team's going to have like 80 or 90 wins. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to say who's going to be in first in their division, who's going to be in second in their division, and then who will eventually be in, you know, dead last in their division. Let's start with the National League. The NL East is going to be a bloodbath. The Mets loaded up in the offseason. The Phillies loaded up in the offseason. I feel like most of the teams have loaded up in the offseason, except really the Nationals and maybe the Marlins. I mean, but yeah, let's get right into it. NL East, I think it's going to be a tight one between the Phillies, Mets, and Braves, but I think the Phillies are going to win, and the Phillies are going to win the division by, it's not even going to be like a large, like, it's not even going to be like, I don't know how to put it, but it's not even going to be by a large amount of games. I feel like the Phillies are going to win the division by like two, maybe three games at minimum. And then I feel like the Mets will end up being in second in the NL East. And then the Braves, and then the Marlins, and then the Nationals. So that's how I'm doing it for the NL East. So I have in first, so like I said, NL East, I have Phillies winning it, Mets in second, Braves in third, Marlins fourth, and the Nationals dead last at the bottom of the NL East. Sorry, Nationals fans. But that's just the truth. NL Central. Gonna be honest. The NL Central is kind of a dumpster fire. I mean, outside of the Cardinals, and I know a lot of Cubs fans are gonna be like, well, we got Dansby Swanson, we got Cody Bellinger, Jameson Taillon. Yes, like, that's great and all. But outside of the Cubs and Cardinals, this division isn't that good. Like, the Reds, they're in the bottom. They're without a doubt finishing last in the NL Central. The Pirates, I think they're going to be second to last. Brewers will probably finish in third. Maybe surprise, maybe sneak into second. But and then I will say I think the Cubs will finish second in their division, and the Cardinals, I think, are going to end up taking the NL Central. So there you have it. I have the Cardinals winning the NL Central. I have the Cubs not too far behind them in second, Brewers in third, Pirates fourth, and Reds dead last in the NL Central. So there we go. Moving quickly along. NL West, here we go. I feel like there's only one right answer for this one, and I know Dodger fans are going to try to, you know, come after me from what I'm about to say, but the Padres. The Padres are winning the NL West, and I think this is going to be by a relatively large margin, because I don't, like, the Giants, Diamondbacks, and Rockies, it's, like, they're not contenders. Like, sorry, Rockies fans, sorry, Giants fans, sorry, Diamondbacks fans. But, like, those three teams alone are not contenders in the NL West. Just not contenders. The Rockies are probably going to finish dead last. Like, I know they have Chris Bryant and all, but, like, I still do not see the Rockies winning a lot of games, like, at all. I feel like, and that brings up my next point. I think the Diamondbacks are going to win more games than the Rockies this season. And that's saying something. And the Diamondbacks haven't been good in a very long time. So, yeah. So, here's my NL West prediction. Padres by a country mile. Giants in second, finishing second in the NL West. Giants third. Diamondbacks fourth. And the Rockies dead last in the NL West. There you have it. The NL West. I have the Padres winning, the Dodgers will finish second, The Giants will finish third. The Diamondbacks fourth, and the Rockies dead last. So there are all my there's my National League division predictions. So like I said, if you didn't catch that before, the division winners, I believe, for the NL East, for each National League division. So if you didn't hear that, here we go. Phillies winning the NL East, Cardinals winning the NL Central, and the Padres winning the NL West, because the Padres are absolutely stacked. And if you try to tell me the Dodgers are going to win that this year, I'd say you're smoking something, because it's not happening. And if the Dodgers just so happen to end up winning the NL West, you can roast me in the comments section or whatever, like, or roast me on my Instagram page at Here's the Thing Sports in the comments section. But I think the Padres will take it quite easily. Anyway, American League. Let's jump right in front. American League East. I'm actually not going to go through the entire division. I'm not going to, like, do what I did for the National League and run it down through, you know, the entire, like, who's going to come in, like, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. I think I'm just going to run down who's going to come in first this time around, because we do have some NHL trades to talk about. Actually, we got a lot of NHL trades to talk about. And, of course, and then we're going to be talking about the cap situation of certain teams, which actually brings me to the other brain fart moment I had when I was recording episode 56. So I'll address that brain fart moment later. But here we go. American League. Let's start with the American League East. Yankees, I think, are going to win the AL East, but I don't, like I said with the NL East, I don't think it's, like I said with the Phillies in the NL East, I don't think it's going to be that much of a, I don't think it's going to be by a big margin. I think the Blue Jays are going to finish second. And then literally it's the Orioles, Rays, and Red Sox. You could go basically any way possible. And I'm going to go Orioles. I'm going to go Rays, Orioles, Red Sox. Actually, no, scratch that. I'm going to go Orioles, Red Sox, Rays. Yeah, that one's going to surprise people. Like, you know, but, you know, it's the Orioles. Yeah, well, did you see how well they played at some points during the season last year? And I know they didn't make a bunch of splash moves, but they got some nice young talent coming up through the system, through the farm system. So they can surprise. They can surprise a lot of people this year, and I feel like they are going to do that. So, yeah. So I have the Yankees claiming the AL East, the Jays in second, Orioles third, Red Sox fourth, and the Rays dead last in the division. I know Rays fans are going to get on my case about that, but I don't know. I mean, you lost in the wild card to, I believe it was the Guardians this past year. Yeah, I'm not convinced, like, the Rays are going to be super, super good. But here's the thing. It's not like I'm saying, like, the Rays are going to be, like, god-awful. But, yeah, I think every team is going to be in this division is going to be going to finish above 500. But the Rays and Red Sox are probably going to have 80 wins minimum, a little over 80 wins. Because there's just no way I see either of the, there's just no way I see either the Rays or the Red Sox getting 90, or hell, even getting to 100 wins. There's just no way, no shot. And knowing this, this take will probably backfire. Knowing what's occurred in the past, this will probably backfire. or backfire. Wow, I said backfired. Wow. Get it together, Luke. Anyway, AL Central. Let's move it along. AL Central, Guardians. The White Sox, they didn't really make any notable moves from what I mean, yeah, they got Andrew Benintendi, but I'm just not convinced that the White Sox are going to be good this year. Like, but that being said, they'll probably end up finishing third in the division. I think the White Sox will end up finishing in third because the Detroit Tigers and the Royals are terrible. So here we go. AL Central. Guardians winning the division. I have the Twins in second, finishing second in the AL Central. White Sox third, Royals fourth, and the Tigers fifth. And now for the AL West. Boy, do I have a tough decision here. Not really. I really don't have a tough decision here because it's pretty crystal clear obvious who's probably going to win the AL West. Let's first start off with who's going to be at the bottom of the AL West. The Rangers and A's. Specifically the A's. They are going to finish dead last in the AL West. That is not a debate. No arguments. They are going to be dead last. They are, without a doubt, one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball in the last few years. They either traded or released all their top tier players, and they've gone to other teams that are legitimate playoff and World Series contenders. So I cannot take the Oakland Athletics seriously. So they are fifth. I believe they are finishing fifth in their division, dead last. And then the Rangers, the Texas Rangers, they're going to finish fourth. Angels, well, actually, hold on. Let me back that up. You know what? I'm not going to back that up and retract that because the Angels, I think the Angels will finish in third. And you know why I say this? Purely because of Trout and Ohtani. If it wasn't for Trout and Ohtani, I'd put them dead last. I'd put them below both the Rangers and A's. But Mike Trout and Ohtani, quite literally and figuratively, carry that franchise. So I think the Angels are going to finish in third. Are they going to make the playoffs? Probably not. Second, Mariners. Mariners are going to finish second in the AL West. They loaded up in the offseason. They got a lot of nice talent over there, especially in the hitting department and the pitching department. But I just don't see them overtaking the Astros at one. I just do not see anyone beating the Astros out for the AL West. It's just not happening. I just don't see that happening, considering how the majority of that World Series core for the Astros from last year is still around. Yeah, it's hard to imagine anyone overtaking the Astros for the AL West. So there you have it. So there you have it. My division predictions for Major League Baseball for the regular season. Like I said, run it back one more time. So if you didn't catch it, now you'll know. In the AL East, Yankees winning. AL Central, Guardians winning. AL West, I have the Astros winning. NL East, Phillies. NL Central, Cardinals, and the NL West, the San Diego Padres. So there you have it. Those are my divisional predictions. So let's hope this does not backfire in any way, shape, or form, which, as I stated before, it probably will. Anyway, moving along. We're moving right into the NHL. Some major trades. And talk about the cap space of certain teams. let's actually start with the cap space of certain teams, because I messed one thing, another thing up in episode 56. And this was for any of you that listened to that episode. That was when I called Ross Colton, Colton Ross. But that's not the one I'm talking about. I'm not talking about mistake with that. I am talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning's cap situation. I messed up on the years that some of those players would be, you know, UFAs or RFAs. So let's go down the list and get through that. First off, here's what their projected cap space is looking like at the end of the season. And while I'm recording this, if you're hearing this part, I am doing this. I am looking at all these cap statistics on Cap Friendly. So, yeah. Anyway, Tampa Bay Lightning, projected cap space at the end of the season, zero. Zero. Or at the end of the regular season, I should say. Zero. Yeah, yikes. Their current cap space is a little over 700,000. And if we're getting, you know, really specific, it would be 769,967. So, and like I said, I'm reading this all on Cap Friendly. But yeah, Tampa's got a lot of UFAs and RFAs in this season. Like I said, I messed that up on episode 56. This was the other brain fart moment I had. But yeah, Alex Killorn, he's going to be a UFA after this season. Vladislav Namestnikov, a UFA after the season. Ross Colton, who, like I said, I called him Colton Ross in episode 56. So, yeah, Ross Colton, he will be an RFA after the season. Pierre-Edouard Belmar, he's a UFA after the season. Corey Perry, UFA after the season. Patrick Maroon is a UFA after 2023-2024. Yeah, they got a lot of UFAs and RFAs to potentially sign, which I'm going to assume they're going to try to bring back most of those guys. And then, of course, on the defensive side, they actually don't really have too much to really worry about. They got, you know, Sergachev and Hedman locked down, Eric Chernak locked down. But yeah, the only one who's going to be a UFA after this season is Ian Cole on the defense. So yeah, that's about it. But their cap situation is not looking too good. Also their draft pick situation, yikes. Absolutely yikes. And we'll get to that in a little bit when we talk about the NHL trades. They have no first-round picks in 2023, 2024, and 2025 because all those picks were traded away. I mean, Tampa fans, I'm just going to put it to you plain and simple. Enjoy the postseason as much as you can. Enjoy going on, you know, potentially going on another cup run or for like the next one or two seasons, because if your team falls apart and you end up being a bottom five team at some point, you're not going to have draft picks to fall back on. Yeah. So, yeah, they're Tampa's kind of screwed with cap space. And of course draft picks, which, like I said, I'll get into the trade that really was a hair raiser or a question raiser. But anyway, yeah, let's move right along. Speaking of cap space, let's get right into the Bruins cap space. Yeah, so let's get into the Bruins cap situation, because we already talked about Tampa's. Let's talk about the Boston Bruins cap situation. They made a bunch of trades, which, like I said, I'll get to that in a little bit. But their projected cap space for the end of the regular season is a little over 100,000. It's actually 125,698. That's their projected cap space for the end of the season, end of the regular season, I should say. Their current cap space is, like I said, I'm reading this off of Cap Friendly. Their current cap space is 528,503. Definitely a very relatively low cap space. And it makes sense because they made a lot of trades. I mean, they made the trades to get Dmitry Orlov and I believe it was Garnet Hathaway. So, yeah, that they're definitely low on cap space, that's for sure. And so far, though, those trades have been working out for them. I believe Orlov had two goals the other night against the Calgary Flames in a very lopsided affair. I believe the shots were like 57 to 20, and Calgary had 57 shots. Yes, Calgary was the team with all those shots, believe it or not. But anyway, let's run through their UFAs and RFAs in the next year, or I should say at the end of the season. Obviously, the biggest one. Obviously, the biggest name there is David Pastrnak. He will be a UFA after the season, and then you got Nick Foligno, who will also be a UFA after the season. Same thing with Patrice Bergeron, Thomas Nosek, and Garden Hathaway. Trent Frederick will be an RFA after the season, and David Krejci will be a UFA after the season. So. Now I got a lot of questions to ask, or a lot of questions to answer, I should say. But obviously, their biggest concern should be re-signing Pastrnak. And gonna be honest with you, if they don't do that, I mean, if the Bruins don't bring back Pastrnak into the fold, Bruins fans are gonna. I have a feeling Bruins fans are gonna try to storm the front office to get Don Sweeney out of there because. And honestly, I would not blame them. Would not blame them. But anyway, those are all the forwards that are going to be UFAs and RFAs after this year. Obviously, they still got guys like Taylor Hall, Brian Marchand, and you know Charlie Coyle locked down, so they don't have to worry about that. But obviously, they definitely need to try to get Pastrnak a new contract. Because that would be a colossal mistake if they didn't bring him back into the fold. And then on defense, Dmitry Orlov is going to be a UFA after the season. Connor Clifton is going to be a UFA after the season. And then in terms of other UFAs and RFAs, Jeremy Swayman is going to be an RFA after this year. So it'll be interesting to see how the Bruins handle it. Considering what their projected cap space is for the you know end of the regular season, like I said, it's a little north of 100,000. It's like a little over 125,000, and of course their current cap space is $528,503, which, like I said, I am looking into all the cap situations for these teams that I'm going to be talking about on Cap Friendly. So we talked about the Bruins and Lightning. Let's move on to a team that just so happens to be my favorite team, and they just traded for Patrick Kane, and that is the New York Rangers. Obviously, Patrick Kane's going to be a UFA after this year alongside Vladimir Tarasenko. It's going to be interesting to see what they do because they also traded Vitali Kravtsov to the Canucks. So the Rangers were wheeling and dealing at the deadline, I should say. And I don't blame them because, actually, yeah, I really don't blame them because the East is armed to the teeth. All the teams that end up making it into the playoffs from the Eastern Conference, they're all armed to the teeth. So they definitely needed to make some moves. Their projected cap space for the end of the season, a little over 29,000. And if we're going to be specific here, $29,040. Yeah, sheesh. And their current cap space after acquiring Kane, $122,100. And of course, their deadline cap space was, you know, $127,914. But yeah, their current cap space, $122,100. So it is going to be, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. The Rangers are another team that is, they're another team that doesn't have much cap space moving forward. It'll be interesting to see what the Rangers do. In terms of UFAs and RFAs for next season, there's a lot. There's a lot that needs to be addressed. Obviously, Vladimir Tarasenko is going to be a UFA after this year. Patrick Kane is going to be a UFA after this year. Filip Hedl is going to be an RFA after this year. That's going to be a big one to address because Filip Hedl has been a very productive player for this Rangers team. He's been a very important player for this Rangers team. So they definitely need to bring him back into the fold. Especially in the playoffs, Filip Hedl was a warrior last year. Just getting to the dirty areas and able to put the puck in the back of the net and create plays for his other teammates. So I think it would definitely be a mistake if the Rangers let him walk. And considering he's going to be an RFA next season, or I should say an RFA after this season, they probably could get him for a little bit cheaper than, your typical UFAs. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But yeah, as I was saying, Tarasenko and Kane are going to be UFAs after this year. Filip Hedl is going to be an RFA after this year. Tyler Mott going to be a UFA after this year. And they got him back in a trade with the Senators. And of course, the other big RFA to address is Alexi Lafreniere. He's going to be an RFA after this year. Ryan Carpenter is going to be a UFA after this season. I'm going to be honest, I don't think the Rangers are going to bring him back. So, and then of course, Keandre Miller is going to be an RFA after this year. So, they definitely need to address their RFAs once the season ends. And then, of course, one last UFA is Nico Mikola, which someone they got in the Vladimir Tarasenko trade. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And then one last one, Yaroslav Halak, the backup goalie, is going to be a UFA after this year. I'm going to be honest. I think it's going to be time. Halak's played decent over the course of the last few weeks when he has been getting starts. He's been playing better. But I'm going to be honest, considering his age right now, considering that he's age 37, the Rangers definitely need to find a different option and find a younger goaltender to be the backup next season. Definitely got to figure something out there. But so that's basically the Rangers' cap situation. They're basically slammed up against the cap. They really can't make any more moves. I mean, honestly, I feel like they should have made some more moves to address the defense a little bit. Obviously having Patrick Kane is a plus on the offensive side, but I'm still, as a Ranger fan, I'm still a little concerned for the defense, because at some points the defense kind of slacks off a little bit over the course of the season. And it's anyone that watches the Rangers, you know, that's been like one of their biggest problems for basically about a decade. I mean, this has been happening since Henrik Lundqvist was the goalie for the Rangers. I feel like defense they should have addressed first, but like I said, I'm not terribly upset at the deadline. Actually, I'm not upset at all at the deadline. Just wish they could have got another defenseman. That's my only critique. But it'll be interesting to see how Patrick Kane fits in the lineup. And really, that top six is pretty loaded. I mean, Panarin, Zibanejad, probably Trocheck, Kreider, Tarasenko, and now Kane. That's a pretty loaded top six. Then, of course, you got Barclay Goodrow as well. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens for the Rangers. And another thing is they cannot... The defense cannot sustain any long-term injuries. And that's the one thing I worry about. I worry about one of the Rangers defensemen like Lindgren or Trouba, or God forbid, like Miller or Fox, goes down with a long-term injury. That's going to be problematic to, making a potentially another deep playoff run. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's kind of a wait and see approach to see what happens and how Patrick Kane fits in with the rest of the team. I think it'll go pretty smoothly, but we'll see what happens. Time will tell. Still a little concerned about the defensive side, just a tad. Anyway, moving right along. New Jersey Devils. This is the other team that was loading up in the East, and I know the Hurricanes were loading up too, but this is the other team I need to get to talk about. Their cap space, let's see. Their projected cap space at the end of the regular season is going to be zero, and their current cap situation is 1.26 million, or in, if we're going to get, put it in layman's terms or to be specific, it's 1 million, 260,000 and $1. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think the Devils are done making moves, because they got a pretty decent team. You cannot deny that. Especially after making the move for Timo Meier. So, who is going to be an RFA after this season, which we'll get into the Devils RFAs and UFAs after this season. And there's a lot of them. Jesper Bratt's going to be one. He's been a big part of this surging New Jersey Devils team. Tomáš Tatar, he's going to be a UFA. And if I didn't mention it before, Jesper Bratt's going to be an RFA. So, just to get that out, because I didn't specifically say whether or not he was a UFA or an RFA, but he is an RFA after this year. Tomáš Tatar is a UFA after this season. Miles Wood is a UFA after this season. Timo Meier, who I just talked about earlier, who they got in the trade with the Sharks, he's an RFA after this year. Eric Halla is a UFA after this year. Yegor Sharangovich is an RFA after this year. Michael McLeod's an RFA after this year. Jesper Boqvist and Nathan Bastian are going to be RFAs after this year. And then, of course, on the defense, Damon Severson and Ryan Graves are going to be UFAs. And, yeah. So there it is. All the UFAs and RFAs after this for the Devils. So RFAs, Jesper Bratt, Timo Meier, Yegor Sharangovich, Michael McLeod, Jesper Boqvist, and Nathan Bastian. And the UFAs are Thomas Tatar, Miles Wood, Eric Halla, and Damon Severson and Ryan Graves. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I didn't mention this one because he's currently on injured reserve, the IR. It's Mackenzie Blackwood. He'll be an RFA. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens for the Devils, because they got a decent team considering where they were a few years ago, even last year when they struggled. And this was when, you know, Jack Hughes started to blossom as a incredibly talented player. They still struggled last year, but considering where they were the last couple of years to where they are now, I think that's some major progress. I'll give them some credit. They did management over there did a pretty good job of trying to fielding a competitive team and making big moves when they needed to and address some injuries, or not injuries, some issues. So credit to them. I mean, obviously as a Ranger fan, it's a tad bit annoying, I'm not going to lie, knowing that one of your biggest rivals is, doing pretty damn good, but I'll give them the credit. This is like the first time in a while Devils fans had some high expectations for this team. So, like I said, I'll give the Devils management some credit. Anyway, so those are the four teams I really wanted to talk about in the East that were making some big moves, in terms of cap space and all that, trades. It's going to be interesting. It really is going to be interesting. So let's currently go into the NHL standings. Where it currently lies, these are who the potential playoff team. Well, obviously you still got the wild card spots. Currently the two teams in the two wild card spots are the Islanders and the Penguins. I'm going to be honest, I would not want to be in one of those wild card spots. I'm just being real, because I think, regardless, if you're in one of those wild card spots, like, it's like, yeah, you're in the playoffs, but at the same time, it's like you're most likely facing the Bruins in the first round. And I'm going to be honest, I would not want to do that. I would not want to be in that situation where I wouldn't want my team to be in the situation where they'd have to face the team with 47 wins, 8 losses, and 5 OT losses, and is currently on an 8-game winning streak. Not the team I want to face in the first round, if I'm being honest with you. And considering how Linus Ullmark has played in net this season for the Bruins, yeah, I definitely would not want to face the Bruins in the first round. That's just me. But yeah, so the two teams currently in the wildcard spots, like I said, are the Islanders and the Penguins. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. The Penguins are actually 1 point away from 1 point behind the Islanders. And could probably, if they win their next game and the Islanders lose their next game, the Penguins can jump them for the first wildcard spot. And that's the thing. The East is a bloodbath, because the Islanders not only have to worry about the Penguins, but you also have to worry about, like, the Islanders also have to worry about the Sabres and the Panthers. Therefore, the Sabres and the Panthers are both 4 points behind. The Islanders have 70 points, and the Sabres and Panthers each have 66. I'm going to be honest. If I want to see any team in the playoffs, if I want to see any team that's in a wild card spot make the playoffs, I want to see, for Buffalo fans' sake, I want to see the Sabres make the playoffs, because they have been going through it for the better half of like two decades. So, and they got an exciting team over there in Buffalo. They do have an exciting team over there. I honestly want to see them make the playoffs. But as stated before, they would most likely be facing probably the Bruins or whoever the other top tier team in the East is, which currently where it stands points wise it would be the Hurricanes. So, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see the playoff matchups. And then let's get to the West real quick before we get down to the trades. Even the West is kind of a bloodbath, but not as much, in my opinion, as the Eastern Conference. Like, it's not like any teams are really neck and neck. It's not even like the teams like that are currently out of postseason contention or in the wild card hunt. It's not like the point totals are like relatively close. It's like there's a decent margin between certain teams outside of the top four teams in each division anyway. And that being the Central Division and the Pacific Division. If there's one team I would not want to face in the West, it is currently the team that is on a six-game winning streak right now, and that's the defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche. You know, they struggled this season. Say what you want. That is the team to beat in the West. And I'm going to be honest with you. There's a few teams in the West that are, you know, up there for some of the best teams in the West, but that are more likely than not, I believe, are going to be first-round exits. I'm not going to say which teams, but because I feel like their fan bases would come after me for saying it. But yeah, the Jets, they're struggling a little bit. The Winnipeg Jets, they're on a four-game losing streak. And I'm going to be honest, this is kind of what happens when you have to rely on your star goalie all the time. I mean, yeah, they have top talent, but I'm familiar with this all too well when you have to rely on your goalie a lot to basically try to shut the door. And usually at some points in the season, it doesn't end too well. When the team starts struggling, then, yeah, it's not good. The Jets are 4-5-1 in their last 10 games. They're kind of, and I'm going to be honest, they're lucky that the Predators haven't really been winning as many games, because the Predators are 8 points back. The Jets have 72 points. The Predators have 64 points. So they're kind of lucky. They don't have any team that's really chasing them down right now. And I'm sorry, Preds fans, but even if your team does like somehow overtake the Jets and sneak into the playoffs, I think they're technically in a wild card spot. I think technically, from what I'm seeing, they'd technically be in a wild card spot with the Calgary Flames. Both of those teams would technically be in a wild card spot, I believe. I could be wrong about that. But anyway, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, and the point differential between the Eastern Conference teams and some of the Western Conference teams, it's ridiculous. I mean, the Western Conference teams, the highest amount of points earned by a Western Conference team this season so far has been the Golden Knights and the LA Kings, both at 76. The highest point total, the highest amount of points earned by teams in the Eastern Conference, the Bruins at 99, the Hurricanes at 86, and the Leafs at 82. So you have multiple teams, and plus the Lightning are probably going to get over 80 points. The Rangers are probably going to get over 80 points. And also the Devils have 83 points right now. So if you're making the statement that the Western Conference is better than the Eastern Conference, in terms of, you know, team-wise and depth-wise, or more specifically team-wise, hate to tell you, that's just not true this year. Just not true at all. Any one of those Western Conference teams, if the playoffs were just, if you put a Western Conference team into the Eastern Conference playoffs, per se, in the Eastern Conference, like that side of the playoff race, they would be a wild card team. Any one of those teams would be a wild card team. And like, it wouldn't matter. Even the defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche would most likely be a wild card team if they were playing in the East. Like, that's how good the Eastern Conference has been. And a lot of people don't want to talk about that. No one wants to talk about that. Anyway, I was going to go through who the pretenders and actually, yeah, you know what? I am going to do that. I think I was going to talk about trades and all that, but I feel like we're going to leave that off for the next episode, because otherwise this episode will be probably over an hour long, and I know most people are probably not going to listen to the full hour, like through and through, like straight on in one go. So we're going to try to keep this. So I apologize if I let anyone down about the trade news, but I feel like most people have seen all the trades going on, so I feel like I don't really need to cover that too much. But anyway, who's a contender and who's a pretender? This is going to be a recurring segment with the postseason, you know, the postseason race for not just the NHL, but Major League Baseball, the National Football League, and the NBA. So this is the first segment of this. So who's a contender and who's a pretender? So here's who I'm going to put as a contender. We're going to go through the East. The Hurricanes, the Bruins, the Lightning, the Rangers, the Devils, currently. Yeah. So the Bruins, like I said, the Bruins, the Lightning, the Hurricanes, Devils, and Rangers. And I know a lot of people are going to get mad that I didn't throw the Sabres in there or the Panthers for a contender. But like I said, the Sabres and Panthers are in the wild card hunt. And even if they do make the playoffs, I just can't see them stealing around from, you know, the likes of the Bruins or the Hurricanes or really any of the other teams. I just cannot see that happening. So sorry to disappoint you, Sabres and Panthers fans. I just can't, as much as I want to see the Sabres and Panthers try to sneak into the playoffs, like I said, even if they do, they're most likely not getting out of the first round. And then another pretender, this one's going to get some backlash, but the Islanders. This is going to get backlash for multiple reasons, because, I mean, you know what, to keep it short and sweet, take Ilya Sorokin off that team and watch, and then see what happens. That's all I'm saying. Take Sorokin off that team and then see what happens. That team collapses. So, I'm just keeping it short and sweet because I have about 2 minutes, a little less than 2 minutes. All right, contenders in the West. I'm just going to go through it. Golden Knights, Avalanche, Stars. And I'm going to say, you know what? Did I say the Kings? I'm going to say the Kings. I didn't say the LA Kings. But they've been having a pretty good year. And the Kraken. I'm going to leave it off with that. And as for pretenders, I'm going to say the Oilers, because they're probably going to find a way to get bounced in like the first or second round with McDavid and Draisaitl. And then the other pretender in the West, Winnipeg Jets. When you relying purely on Connor Hellebuck is not a recipe for success. And I think it's all going to come crashing down for Winnipeg in the first round. And if you're wondering why I didn't throw the Leafs in the Pretenders for the first round last year, or first round this year, I mean, for the if you're wondering why I didn't throw the Leafs in for the throw the Maple Leafs in the Pretenders column for this year's playoffs, for this year's potential playoff run, despite all the trades they make, I feel like it's pretty obvious. It goes without saying that team is notorious for losing in the first round. So, but it's also way too, the Toronto Maple Leafs are also way too easy of a target. So I'm not going to say anything there, because I feel like every Leafs fan is going to be chirping me in the comments. This is our year. This is, you know, the year we finally get out of the first round. All I'm going to say, Leaf fans, is good luck. I kind of hope, I actually kind of hope you guys do win in the first round, whoever your matchup is, unless it's the Rangers, obviously. But I kind of do, like I said, hope you guys manage to get out of the first round, so next year we don't have to hear that this is our year. Or this is the year we finally get out of the first round, because it's honestly pretty tiring at this point. And I am currently, this episode is basically over an hour. This episode is now basically over an hour. Didn't want to make an hour long episode, but well, here we are. And I said I wasn't going to, now that we're already over an hour, we might as well talk about the recent trades that went down. Even though I said I wasn't gonna talk about that. The Oilers sent Tyson Barry to Nashville. I'm just gonna recap it. Recap the big trades. Tyson Barry. I'm not gonna go like the full trade details, because I'm sure the majority of you guys seen it. Tyson Barry got sent to Nashville by Edmonton. This one was a shocker. Jonathan Quick was traded to Columbus, which I'm going to be honest with you, did not see that one coming at all. And I think the Kings did Jonathan Quick dirty. And in return, the Kings got Vladislav Gavrikov and Jonas Korpisalo. So, and going back on the whole Jonathan Quick getting sent to Columbus thing, yeah, no chance he plays a game with the Blue Jackets this year. I think he's going to hang him up. I think he's going to retire after this year, which, see, like, having to see him, like, retiring in a different uniform is just, it just doesn't feel right. Just doesn't look right. I feel like the Kings should have at least let him retire. Let him finish the season out with the Kings and then retire instead of trading him. And I know everyone's going to say, well, it's a business. But, yeah, well, when you trade the best goalie your franchise has ever seen in your franchise's history, when you trade him like that, that's a bad look. Anyway, moving along. Obviously, Patrick Kane of the Rangers, everyone knows that. Toronto got Luke Shen from the Canucks. Washington got Rasmus Sandin. Toronto got Erik Gustafsson. Let's see. What other trades? Obviously, I went over Orlov and Garnet. Obviously, I went over Dmitry Orlov and Hathaway going to the Bruins. The Blackhawks traded Jake McCabe and Sam Lafferty to the Leafs. I'm not highlighting the first or the full trades. I'll leave that up for you to look at. The Lightning acquired Tanner Jeannot from the Predators, and they gave up way too much, in my opinion. This was what I was saying earlier in the episode. All that first round pick, I believe now Tampa does not have any first round picks for like the next 3 years. So it's going to be interesting. going to be interesting to see what happens in the future, because they're really banking on this being able to make a cup run for the, you know, make more cup runs for the next 3 years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I think Tampa gave up way too much. I mean, way too much for Tanner Jeannot. Yeah. So, and obviously Timo Meier going to the Devils. We all saw that. So I don't need to go through the whole trade. Ivan Barbashev went to Vegas from St. Louis, and that brings up my next point. St. Louis Blues fans, welcome back to rebuild mode, because your team's going to be rebuilding for a while. I hope you enjoyed that Stanley Cup in 2019, because that's probably the last Stanley Cup you're going to see for a while. Not to be mean here, but it's just the truth. And then Nino Niederreiter going to Winnipeg for a second-round pick. So, yeah. I mean, that's about it. And, yeah, this is literally just over an hour-long episode. I literally had to divide this not almost into parts, per se, but I recorded, like, the first 29 minutes yesterday. I got up, and these next two sections of the pod, the next, like, 40-plus minutes, I recorded this in two separate sections, because I'm recording on Anchor, and Anchor only lets you record like 30 minutes at a time per segment. So anyway, like I said, you do not have to listen to this in one go. I highly don't recommend that, because like I said, this is probably my longest episode I've ever made, a little over an hour. Yeah. So, that being said, that's it, because I'm done talking. I talked about whatever I needed to talk about and then some. So this has been your host, LT Nasty. I will see you in episode 64. And also, yeah, like I said before, do not listen to this episode in one go, because it's over an hour. Listen to this in like 10, 15 minute, maybe even 20 minute increments. Anyway, it's been your host, LT Nasty. See you in episode 64. Peace.